You are about to listen to the full interview with Thomas Winterton. Sections of it were originally included in our Skinwalker Ranch episode. If you haven't listened to the full episode, we recommend you go listen. It'll provide context for this interview. Thomas Winterton is the superintendent at Skinwalker Ranch, managing day-to-day operations. He is also featured in the History Channel's television series, Skinwalker Ranch. We spoke with him about the history of the ranch, his own personal encounters, and what research is now being conducted.
Well, my name's Thomas Winterton, and I'm the manager of Skinwalker Ranch. I oversee the facilities, and I coordinate between all of the functions that are going on the ranch, whether it be the science or the actual ranching activities or the public relations in the immediate community surrounding the ranch.
Like, how many days out of the year do you think you spend on that ranch?
So I probably average 2 to 3 days a week on the ranch.
And when did you first learn about the mysteries around the ranch?
So I first learned about the ranch when I was a kid. Growing up in the Uinta Basin, I remember reading in the newspapers, especially at the time that the Shermans had the ranch. There were a lot of reports in the local newspapers regarding the cattle mutilations, the UFOs. And then I actually had an uncle that lived close to Junior Hicks. And Junior Hicks is he's kind of a legend here in the Uinta Basin. And he's been studying UFOs for 70 years, studying, documenting them. So anytime there was a sighting, he would go interview the people. He was meticulous and very methodical and scientific in his interviewing and in his research. And so he lived close to my uncle, and he was actually heavily involved in Skinwalker Ranch during the Bigelow era, had come out and investigated a lot with the scientists that were out here. Mr. Bigelow had actually taken him down to Las Vegas and had him speak down there at, I believe it was Bigelow Aerospace at the time, I'm not sure. But anyways, he was always talking to my uncle and telling him the stories that were going on the ranch. And of course, those always got retold around the family dinner. So it was kind of everywhere growing up.
Yeah, this story is just, it's so fascinating because there's so many different types of stories around the ranch and things that people have experienced. You touched on UFO sightings, but what other phenomena do people report in the area and at the ranch?
The ranch is special in the fact that, you know, there's hot spots all over the world that are known for UFOs or maybe cattle mutilations or poltergeists. But what makes Skinwalker Ranch special and unique is that there seems to be the entire gamut of activity that takes place there. Everything from reported portals, orbs, cattle mutilations, UFO sightings, of course, the legend of Skinwalker, the shape-shifting demonic being that roams along the ridge there. Just all kinds of phenomena that covers the entire spectrum. So it's not any one thing. It seems to be a little bit of everything.
You mentioned Skinwalker, and obviously the ranch is called Skinwalker. Can you kind of describe what a Skinwalker is and how the ranch got that name?
So Skinwalker Ranch derives its name from the Skinwalker, which is a shape-shifting demonic being that can take the shape of many different entities, whether it be the common one is a wolf that turns into a man, but it can also appear as a coyote or as a crow, many different shapes. The legend of this ranch is that the Navajos used to be up in this area. At one point, the Navajos and the Utes got into a skirmish, and the Utes pushed the Navajos out of the Uinta Basin. And as they were doing this, the Navajo shaman cursed this specific area of ground that now is home to Skinwalker Ranch with the curse of the Skinwalker. And that was kind of the retribution for being pushed out.
So you spend a lot of time on that ranch. Have you had any strange experiences since your time being there?
So I spend a lot of time on the ranch. I'm the primary facility caretaker. I oversee the ranching activities. I coordinate the science activities. So I spend a lot of time on the ranch. When I first came on the ranch, I guess I could just describe myself as a very healthy skeptic. I'd heard the stories, obviously, growing up here in the basin, but I didn't really believe them. And I definitely didn't believe in the paranormal. It didn't take very long of being on the ranch before unusual things started to occur. And really, within, 6-7 months on the ranch, I'd, I had experienced several very unexplainable events. Everything from hearing voices that were giving me commands. There's one specific spot on the ranch that two separate occasions I've heard what I thought were audible voices. The second time I heard them, though, I know that it was not audible because I was running a piece of equipment and the noise was extremely loud, and I had earbuds in listening to an audiobook when I heard these voices. And it was just as clear as if you were standing right next to me and we were talking in normal tones. You know, somebody could have been standing right outside my piece of equipment and yelling, and I may not have been able to hear them, especially with me. I do have some hearing loss. And so the fact that I heard this voice so clearly and so audibly tells me that it came from within my head. It was inside my head, which makes me then question the other incidents that I've heard these same voices, what I thought were audible voices at the time, but from that one incident, you know, I realize it's possible that it came from inside my head. So I've heard voices. I've seen strange phenomena around the homesteads. I've seen shadow figures. I suffered an injury that was unexplainable, medically impossible, as termed by the doctors. Very severe head injury that almost cost me my life. And then there's a million things that happen on the ranch. Travis Taylor, one of the scientists that is on our show, I think he described the ranch best when he said, you know, Skinwalker Ranch is like death by a thousand paper cuts. Because there are a million little things that happen, and it doesn't take very long for you to start questioning your sanity on that ranch. And I've witnessed a lot of things. A lot of things to this day that I can't explain, and a lot of things that have been witnessed by others. So there, I've had incidents. I was on the ranch. I was up working on a set of cameras, and at the time, I was coordinating through my phone through text with our lead investigator Eric Bard, and we were working together to try to get these cameras online. And I was up on top of the ridge. And our ranch dog, William, was up there with me. And I'm up there, and all of a sudden, William just starts whining really loud, which is out of character for him. And he starts whining, and then I lose control of my phone, which is another common phenomena. For some reason, you know, the electromagnetic radiation, whatever it is, the interference, we have a hell of a problem trying to maintain electronics on the ranch. And so my phone's taken over, meaning I lost control of the screen, and it starts opening its own apps. It starts going through functions, and it won't respond to me. And it's almost like it has a mind of its own. And so I had another individual with me on the ranch at that point, and I yelled over to him and said, "Hey, I can't get through to Eric. I've lost control of my phone. I need to go down to the control center." So we start climbing down off of the mesa to go down into the control room. And when we get to the bottom, we'd left a bag down at the bottom that had some different gear and stuff. And one of the things in that bag was a LED flashlight. And this LED flashlight had gone dead, so we just left it in the bag, didn't bother to take it up with us. And we get down to the bottom, and this bag is just like glowing really bright. And I looked at it, I'm like, what the heck is going on? Go over there and open up the bag, and this LED flashlight that had completely dead batteries is sitting there pulsating so bright. I mean, it was pulsating brighter than even if it had fresh batteries in it, right? And so that's one time where I had a witness there with me. The dog was whining and the phone starts behaving. So we have three separate anomalies taking place at the same time. I have witnessed a lot of things on Skinwalker Ranch.
One of the really weird things about, I think, the stories that I hear is this like mix of technology versus supernatural. There's a lot of sightings of flying saucers that seem like there's a technological origin to them, but then at the same time you have these things like hearing voices that may not be there and shadow people. And I know this is probably something that nobody knows, but like, does it feel like there's a technological origin to this phenomena, or do you think there's something just beyond our understanding that's causing all of this phenomenon to happen?
you know, what's causing this on the ranch, I think that's the part that's the most frustrating is, you know, we come across what the scientist, what Eric Bard will call a fingerprint. You know, a fingerprint of what could be going on. I know in season one, episode one, Eric, you know, brings out the case, and it turns out to be this magnet, and everybody's kind of confused, like, what does a magnet have to do with any of this? But, you know, a very strong magnetic field, electromagnetic interference can replicate many of the things that we're seeing on the ranch. Even on the human physiology, you get strong electromagnetic interference. Travis tells about when he was going to school and some of his classmates put their head between very large magnet, and it actually, they got stuck. They couldn't, like, it messed up the signals in their head so bad that they reported seeing colors, hearing things. You know, we're just one big circuit board, so that would make sense why we would experience that. The frustrating thing is, though, we'll find a fingerprint, such as this electromagnetic radiation, but it can't account for everything. And we haven't been able to find, like, any one thing that could account for everything we're seeing, because we see such a wide range. And so you find something like that and you think, well, it'll account for this, this, and this, but that still leaves that, that, and that, that, that doesn't fit in that box. And so people ask us all the time, like, what do you think is going on? You know, is it this or is it that? And our answer is yes. It seems to be that it would have to be multiple things on a multiple front. And now whether all those multiple things tie back and are related somehow, I don't know. But you can't point to any one thing and say, oh, you know what, that's the cause.
You mentioned could you maybe touch on your head injury and what happened there?
Yeah, you know, my head injury is one of those things. There's a lot to it, and I'll just be perfectly honest. There is a lot of details and circumstances around my injury that I'm definitely not comfortable talking about. Matter of fact, I'll say there's some that I still haven't come to terms with. The injury itself, it's changed the way that I look at the world. Definitely made me realize there's more to this world than we know. But, in March of 2017, I suffered a severe head injury. And what ended up happening is, I'm able to remember it really well because it actually started on my birthday. And so, you know, it was March 4th, and I was getting ready to go to bed that night. We had a little celebration with the family and cake and ice cream and stuff. And I went to lay down for the night, and I had a really sore spot on the back of my head. It was back on the lower, just above my neck, on the back side of my head. And it was probably about the size of a quarter or 50-cent piece. It was really tender to the touch, like a bruise. And I laid down, I thought, what the heck? And it was strange, because I was thinking, well, I haven't hit my head. Like, I wonder what that's from. But I didn't think anything more than that. I went to bed. When I woke up Sunday, that spot had swollen up to where it was, you know, it was like a goose egg back there. And it was extremely tender to the touch. I mean, it hurt really bad. And I started to get sick and associated with, like, you know, flu symptoms and nauseousness. I felt like crap. And as the day progressed, Sunday, my wife was concerned, and she mentioned, she said, maybe we should take you up to the hospital and have you checked out. And my initial thought at the time, I just told her, well, it's probably an insect bite. Like, I probably got bit by a spider or something. And so my thing was, we'll just tough it out. It'll pass. And so I didn't let her take me to the hospital. And Sunday night it progressed. And then through Monday, she was starting to get concerned, and she kept asking me, can I please just take you into the clinic? And I said, no. You know, just give me some time. Like, it probably is a poisonous spider. We'll just need to let it run its course. I hate going to the hospital for anything. I basically have to be carried in there on a stretcher. Monday night was the worst night of my entire life. And from Monday night to Tuesday morning, I had the most horrific 12 hours of my entire life. And basically in that 12 hours, that little goose egg bump took and spread. And it went all the way up through my head, up down through my forehead. And finally, when my wife saw me Tuesday morning, she panicked really bad because there was a very definite line across my forehead. And it was right at that line that, like, then my head was swollen out big time. So, and what that line was it was actually, I had fluid that came in and separated the fatty tissue away from my skull. So what happened is I ended up getting scalped completely, and it separated the entire part of my head, with the exception of the portion just around my eyes and down around my mouth. So, you know, to give you a visual, by the end of Tuesday, I could grab my hair with my hands and basically walk my scalp around my
oh,
head.
Oh, that's so gross. Ow.
Yeah.
That is terrible.
And so the doctors, you know, we spent a week, and it continued to get more and more severe, to the point that, you know, my doctor, started preparing my wife for the fact that I could have some serious brain damage because of it, or I may not even pull through it. And so it was a traumatic time, and they ran 43 different tests on me that week. And the doctor just kept coming in. He was frustrated. He's like, you know, you're the healthiest sick person I've ever met in my life. There was no, you know, they checked me for insect bites. They checked me for head trauma, like, you know, if I had gotten hit there. They ran every test that they could think to run, and everything just, my labs kept coming back perfect. Everything just kept looking really good. And so, you know, the doctor saying this is impossible, like, this is medically impossible. I've never seen this before. He's a military doc, seen a lot of things. Because of my association with the ranch, it was shortly after I was out of the hospital, a pretty rigorous investigation ensued to try to get to the bottom and figure out what was going on. So it's been a crazy couple years as that investigation has gone on. And the injury itself was disturbing. The investigation's been disturbing. Pretty much every aspect of it has been disturbing. It's rocked my world for sure.
But you feel pretty confident that this injury may be connected in some way to the ranch?
Well, I mean, again, I go back to the fact that I'm a healthy skeptic. And when it first happened, I refused to acknowledge that it was associated with the ranch. I was adamant. You know, as the investigation goes on and you start putting pieces together, there's no way to definitively say, absolutely, this is because of the ranch.
Right.
But again, you know, talking about fingerprints, the fingerprints are there, and there's a high likelihood that, yes, it is associated with the ranch.
Have you ever experienced any further complications, like anything else similar to that since then, or is that the worst of it so far?
No, like, so I have experienced a couple minor reoccurrences of it, and you know, this is all part of the investigation, and while it sucks to have a reoccurrence, when it does happen, you know, it does lend more clues as to what possibly could be taking place. And matter of fact, when we were filming season one, and we did an all-nighter that night where we filmed all through the night, and we were out in the field. We started picking up. Well, first we saw that beam in the sky. Couldn't see it with our naked eye. You could only pick it up in the infrared. Shortly after seeing that beam, then of course our spectrum analyzer start going off the charts. And we had this little tinfoil board that we were trying to pinpoint where the signal might be coming from, holding that, and all of a sudden my head started to throb really bad, and that exact same spot where it started, I started to have pretty severe pain there, throbbing. That made me very nervous. I've had a couple other times where it actually started to swell up as well in that. And it's always in that same, like, always in that exact same spot. So I don't know if that's just, like, because it's been weakened, and that's, like, the weak link. I don't know, but I have had a couple small reoccurrences. Luckily, nothing major. And for the most part, I've made a full recovery, and have, you know, I enjoy good health.
Good. Could you tell me about the experiences of Terry and Gwen Sherman, the original owners of the ranch?
I'll be honest with you. I'm always reluctant to speak about the experiences that Gwen and Terry Sherman had because I've never been able to hear Gwen and Terry out of their own mouth. It's always been through a third party who's relating these stories. And while I don't want to question those third parties at all, I also know that information can change as it exchanges from one person to another. What I can tell you, though, is that the Shermans are good people. I have no reason ever to doubt them or their claims. And they were definitely terrorized when they were on that ranch. And the stories that have been told are everything from, you know, having their prized cattle mutilated, a significant portion of mutilations that took place, orbs chasing their livestock, even orbs turning their dogs into, or, you know, turning their dogs into grease spots, as the story is told. Having a dire wolf come up and grab one of their cows. There's a story of their bulls being put into a container and being found in a catatonic state, all crammed in. And I've seen the container. It's there on the ranch. I mean, if that is indeed how the story happened, then that makes for a very strange story, because how the bulls would get in there and be crammed into this tight space would be definitely a marvel in itself. Stories of Harry going out working with farm equipment, like a post hole digger or an auger, turning around, and when he turns back around to put his attention back on the equipment, it's gone, only to be discovered several weeks later, 75 feet up into a tree. Multiple UFO sightings, even having UFOs come right down there in the pasture. You know, Gwen bringing groceries home, putting them away in the cupboard and the fridge, then going into the bathroom and coming back out and finding the groceries of, you know, they're all back out of the and on the counter. Many different types of phenomena that took place with them, and multiple times. They saw UFOs multiple times. They had multiple cattle mutilations, the poltergeist activity. Definitely a wide range of activities that took place during the Sherman era on the ranch.
So you've never had a chance to talk to them about it?
So personally, like, I have made attempts, especially with the production of the TV show. We would love for the opportunity to have them tell their story, because our goal is to get to the truth. We're not there to sensationalize. You know, obviously Hollywood and the editors, they'll add their music in there and do what they can to, you know, to make it captive and make it watchable. But as far as the Skinwalker Ranch team, we have no interest in trying to fabricate things. We want to get through the stories and find out what's fact, what's fiction. And so there have been multiple attempts to reach out to them, but for whatever unknown reasons thus far, they haven't had any interest in talking. And from talking to family members and those friends that are close to them, they've suffered a lot of trauma associated with this part of their lives, and they don't want to relive it. And I don't blame them.
One of the more tangible effects on the ranch is the animal mutilations that you mentioned. Have you, since your time working on the ranch, have you had any issues with that?
No, we have not had any cattle mutilations, with the exception of the one cow that died in season one, which you saw as part of the television series. We haven't had any animals die on the ranch as far as cattle mutilations or anything else like that. Obviously, the alpacas got attacked. We haven't experienced cattle mutilations, and it's not that we're advocating for that. Obviously, we're not. We're not advocating for any unethical treatment of animals, but we do have cows on the ranch, and, you know, for science purposes, you know, if something like that were to happen, it would probably, we could probably glean a lot of information off of it, but we haven't had anything happen since we've taken over the ranch.
Do you know much about Robert Bigelow?
Yeah, so unfortunately, there's not a lot I can say about that, and part of the reason is that Mr. Bigelow himself has not released very much information at all. I mean, really what we have to go by is a book that was written by Colm Kelleher, who's closely associated with Mr. Bigelow. We've been able to talk to some of the scientists that were there during the Bigelow era. But, you know, Bigelow got $22 million from the Pentagon to do some of this investigation. And my suspicion is that their findings were classified. You know, anytime the government provides you with money, there's always strings attached. And so my guess is that they owned whatever findings they had that came from that money. The government owned those, and they're classified, and he can't release them. When Brandon bought the ranch, he made it very clear up front that he wasn't going to be able to share anything. He's basically, you know, going as is. We bought it with a clean slate, and there are a million rumors, but even the way that Bigelow conducted the investigation, and I'll probably need to be very careful here because I don't want to get myself in trouble with anyone, but even the way that it was set up, the way that the reporting, you know, from the scientists and the security and everything, the way they reported the incidents to Bigelow, everything was set up in a way that really guarded secrecy and really maximized confidentiality. And I don't know, I can't be sure that even Bigelow's scientists had a full understanding of everything that was going on the ranch, just because of the way that the whole organization was structured. And so we know so little about it. There's a lot of speculation, but I could tell you from reading the internet, a lot of speculation about our time on the ranch as well, since Brandon bought it. And I can read down through that and realize that 75% of it is not factual. And so it's hard to say on the Bigelow era how much of those rumors that we read are fact and how much of them have been inflated.
So do you know what Brandon's motivation was for buying the ranch? Because, I mean, this doesn't really seem to fit in his portfolio of previous work. It's a bit of a departure. Do you know why he got interested in pursuing this ranch?
Yeah, well, Brandon is very successful. I mean, he's one of the most successful real estate guys on the planet. And he's very good at what he does. But in addition to his real estate interests, Brandon's always been very interested in tech and also in the sci-fi. And it was through his work with he had invested in a previous endeavor, and he'd worked in this endeavor, he'd worked with some of the same scientists that worked with Bigelow's team. Brandon's always had an interest for what else is out there. And being raised LDS, there's always where do we come from? Why are we here? Where are we going? You know, the bigger answers or the bigger questions in life. And, you know, from my own personal perspective, I think that when you have reached a level of success like Mr. Bigelow or Brandon, and you've conquered or you have dominion in your kingdom, you start looking around and wondering what else is there, you know, what else is there to this life? And so Brandon has this intense curiosity. And when he bought the ranch, he was just like the rest of us. He was a healthy skeptic. He had brought Eric Bard in his previous endeavor to debunk, if you will, the technology that was being advertised. And so he largely expected to do the same thing with Skinwalker Ranch. And so he brought Eric Bard in. And Eric is one of the most disciplined, thorough, meticulous individuals I've ever been around. And that man is... He takes very seriously his role as a scientist. He always says, I'm not here to believe, I'm not here to disbelieve, I'm here to observe. He is very disciplined in that manner. So Brandon brought him in, and really, I think all of us were there saying, you know, we're here to prove that all these stories are nothing but a bunch of inflated ghost stories that have been largely exaggerated.
Is this phenomenon, is it localized to the ranch, or are people experiencing things in that area generally that are unexplainable?
So the ranch seems to be the epicenter. It seems to have a higher concentration of these strange, of the high strangeness. That being said, you would be hard-pressed to find anybody who's lived in this Uinta Basin for any number of years that's not had their own personal experience of seeing a UFO or having some type of anomaly take place that's pretty remarkable. It's basin-wide. The Uinta Basin, for some reason, seems to be a hot spot for UFO sightings, for paranormal, even for things even such as like Bigfoot sightings. So the Uinta Basin seems to be, it seems to be basin-wide. I mean, in the same valley, we have another ranch here that's got a television show on the Discovery Channel that is reporting strange phenomena. So the Uinta Basin, it's not confined just to the 512 acres of Skinwalker Ranch. It seems to be basin-wide. But the ranch does seem to be, for whatever reason, the epicenter of it.
The things that people are experiencing that you've experienced, I mean, obviously you've had the injury. Do you think this is an effect produced on the viewer? Or do you think there is a physical craft flying in the sky when someone sees a UFO?
I actually think it's both. And I think that we've collected enough evidence to show that, yes, there is a physical craft in the, you know, talking specifically about a UFO, for example. We have multiple incidents now where I believe we've collected sufficient data to show that, yes, there is an actual something up there in the sky, and that it's not just an effect on the viewer. There are other times where the evidence would tend to lean to the fact that it's an effect on the viewer. And for example, we have times when this craft's been seen when we had multiple eyewitnesses that saw it. We had multiple cameras that picked it up. We had instrumentation that were measuring unusual readings during that time. And we had the cattle on the ranch reacting as well. So you had a lot of data points suggesting that there's something physical and real taking place. All the witnesses reported seeing the exact same thing. And the thing and the object that we picked up in the camera matched what we all saw. So that would suggest that was actually something physical. But then we've also had incidents where we have had multiple individuals witness a craft in the sky. And the interesting thing was that in the group, some of them were not able to see it. Some of them saw one thing and some of them saw another, which would lend evidence to it being an effect on the viewer, right? Because we're not all reporting the same thing. We're not all seeing the same thing. And matter of fact, some of us aren't seeing it at all. I think we have pretty good evidence to show that both are occurring.
Have you ever seen a UFO on the ranch?
You know, I think of all of the phenomena on the ranch, UFOs are the easiest for me to wrap my head around. So when I see them, and maybe it's because my brain is so skeptical that my brain goes down the checklist. Well, it's probably a plane. Well, it's probably a satellite. Well, maybe it's a helicopter. Maybe it's a drone. You know, oh, crap. It's none of those. Like, it doesn't check any of those boxes, either because of its behavior or one element or another, you know, won't fit inside of that. I've been out there on the ranch. We had multiple witnesses where we had an object coming across the sky. It looked identical to a satellite. And that's what we thought we were seeing, was a satellite coming across the sky. Except for when it got almost directly above us, it stopped on a dime, took a hard 90-degree turn, and then started to go. So it was coming across from the north to the south, if I remember right. When it gets above us, it stops, takes a hard right, and starts heading to the west. Satellites don't do that. And neither do planes. You know, you don't get a plane that takes, I'm talking like a perfect 90-degree turn. It definitely was not a helicopter. Even to try to put it in the classification of a drone, maybe, but it was so far up there. And, you know, the behavior would not lend itself to such. So there's those type. We had one night. I was coming onto the ranch. It was late. I had my wife with me. We're pulling in, and while we're waiting for the gate to open at the entrance, my wife says, hey, that star just moved up there. And I dismissed it. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure, like, it's probably just the branches of the trees making it look like it's moving. We drive up to the ranch house and get out, and she's like, no, I think it's moving. So we got out, and it was a perfectly dark night, no moon. Sat there and stared at it for what seemed to be an eternity. It probably was only 2 or 3 minutes. And I'll be and it was a still night, too. And I'll be danged if that, sure enough, after a few minutes, it looked like it was just staying perfectly still. And after a few minutes, it made an abrupt and quick movement to the side, what I would say a couple inches to the side, but it put it on the other side of this large tree branch. So there was, like, it was a way to measure and mark for sure that this thing had moved, right? And so I ran into the command center and grabbed the night vision goggles, and also grabbed the caretakers that live on the ranch, Tom Lewis and Candace Lindy. And they came out, and we all sat there and watched it. And with the night vision, all these stars show up in the night vision. You can't see with the naked eye. And we're watching this, and sure enough, its position relative to the stars is moving pretty dramatically. And we sat out there for probably 20 minutes. And when I say move, it would appear like it was still for the longest time, and then all of a sudden, it would move in almost a flash of an eye. I mean, so fast from one point to another. It wasn't like a plane that could be flying away from you or even towards you and then just like slowly coming across. It was like immediate. And so we sat there and watched this object until all of a sudden it just disappeared. So don't know what that was, but we watched that for quite some time. Seen when we were filming season 1, we had a craft appear above us when we were shooting off the rockets. Saw it multiple times. I have with one other person witnessed a craft. And the interesting thing is this person was pretty intuitive. And we were out kind of in the middle of the ranch, and this person said, there's a craft above us. And I looked up and I was waiting. I didn't see anything. It was a clear blue sky with just a few wisps of white clouds in the sky. It was almost entirely blue. And this person said, just wait, watch. And sure enough, like after a minute, minute and a half, I see this translucent white object just dart out from behind the cloud for maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and then it darted back behind the cloud. So I've seen so many different objects up in the sky that defy reasonable explanation, but I guess that puts them all in the classification of unidentified. You know, the investigation started the day Brandon bought the ranch, and it's been going nonstop since. So even though we're doing this television series and we've done some filming during the last 2 summers, when the cameras go down and the production crew leaves, we actually get back to science. It's actually, you know, the show can be somewhat disruptive to the science sometimes, just with the filming schedule and the way that we have to work around the production. We're always trying to add new and better equipment, whether that be cameras, whether that be sensors. We're constantly upgrading our infrastructure. We've made vast upgrades even just in the last couple months. We have some new exciting equipment that we're excited about. Eric's constantly looking for AI solutions. When you have literally dozens and dozens and dozens of cameras like we do on the ranch, each one of those represents 1 hour of footage. You know, for every 1 hour of footage, you're getting, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours of footage to review. And a lot of the events that we record, a lot of the anomalous events that we record on the ranch can be, some of them can be literally a few frames and that's it. So you're talking about a split second, literally, you know, a 15th or, you know, 4 or 5 15ths of a second or 30th, whatever the frame rate of the camera is. To scrub through the footage, it's an overwhelming task. And so Eric's always looking for ways to streamline that, and he's written some pretty sophisticated software. So we're always improving our infrastructure and trying to get better with our scientific monitoring and our equipment.
I bet there's an army of people out there who would love to help you review that footage. You should try to crowdsource some of that out if you haven't.
You know, I can't go a lot into that, but I'll just say that that's an excellent idea, and it may or may not have been the point of conversation many times.
Have you heard of any other place in the world that is similar to the ranch that might be experiencing the same type of phenomenon?
The publicity from the show has brought a lot of people out of the woodwork, and I know Brandon, he gets way more than I do, but even myself, and I'm sure the rest of the team does. We get a lot of messages, whether it's through social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook, those things, or the few people that are able to find direct channels to us. We've gotten a lot of messages from individuals that are from this spot of the world or that spot of the world, and claim to know of places that are similar to the ranch and that experience similar type of phenomena. So I'm so busy, I haven't had time to look into these spots. But, you know, I would say from the number of messages coming in that it's definitely possible that there are other locations around the globe that may experience similar types of events.
Do you want to talk a little bit about, kind of, because we haven't really touched on it, but just kind of the show that you work on and kind of what the premise is and where people can find it?
Yeah, the show's interesting. When Brandon first took over the ranch, the question was, is any of this real? And as the investigation started to unfold, very quickly, the question turned from, is this real, to, okay, this is real, what do we do with it? And I could tell you that I've been in a lot of meetings with Brandon, the scientists, the advisory board, where the discussion revolves around what is the responsibility, what responsibility do we have to the public, to the ranch? Brandon always viewed himself as a steward, as all of us do, like we're a steward of the ranch. And so the discussion came around, okay, there's definitely something happening on the ranch, so now what? You know, what do we do now? And despite a lot of the comments on the internet, when Brandon bought this, there was no thought of doing a TV show. As a matter of fact, the individual that's really ultimately responsible for getting this this deal with the History Channel was a guy named T.J. Allard. He's one of the executive producers. And he reached out to me, and at the time, nobody knew Brandon was the owner, and because of my role on the ranch and my public relations with the community, anytime there was a issue relating to the local governments or laws that needed to be attended to, it was me that went and took care of it. So when you researched the ranch, my name was the only one that you could find attached to it. And T.J. Allard had reached out to me and probably got two or three requests a month. From the time that it became known that I was associated with the ranch, I started getting two to three requests from production companies, networks, you name it. You know, all these filmmakers, documentarians, they were reaching out to me, hey, would you guys be interested in doing a TV show? And, you know, I'd reach out to Brandon and say, hey, this person contacted me, what do you think? And he'd say, no, I have no interest, you know. It was just a flat no. T.J. Allard reached out, and I told him he was very polite, he's very professional, and he was different than a lot of the ones that had reached out. And I told him, I said, you know, we're not interested in doing anything, but that's today. Like, it never hurts to reach out tomorrow. And so TJ faithfully started to reach out every month. Every month, like clockwork, he'd reach out to me. Hey, you know, how you doing? And before long, and he did this for almost a full year, and established some credibility. He'd done some work that I was aware of, and so finally I said, you know what, let me let you talk to Jim Morse. As superintendent, Jim's manager, Jim started some dialogue with him, and Jim carried it with him for probably another 3 or 4 or 5 months. And finally, Jim and I both told Brandon, you know, you ought to listen to this guy, at least give him just give him a meeting. So Brandon met with him and was impressed by him and said, you know, we would consider it, but we have to, like, this is serious science and we don't want to make a circus out of it. They agreed to those terms, and then Brandon started to work with the network, and then they brought in Prometheus Productions, which, you know, does Ancient Aliens and Curse of Oak Island, and has a lot of experience, and the rest is kind of history. And through that, they enticed Brandon to out himself as the owner, and so yeah, we brought the channel on, and what we've done is we try to do experiments, and it is an investigation. None of it is scripted. Absolutely none of it is scripted. We do try to do some experiments in that, you know, would be captivating, or because if you were to watch a lot of the science that goes on the ranch, it's like watching paint dry, and it's the most boring, tedious, like rip your eyeballs out type of work. And so, you know, we brought Travis Taylor on. The network had good ties with him, and he's come and joined our investigation and brought a lot of different perspectives, and helped us take the investigation to shift it to a different perspective. Eric was really purely observational. We wanted to just observe and try to understand what was going on. Travis is more like proactive offense. Let's go poke it with a stick, as he likes to put it, and see if we can get it to respond. And so the series has been fun. It's people ask, you know, is it real? Is it scripted? It's absolutely real. Of course, you know, the editors have to do their thing and make it watchable for the general public, because not everybody loves, you know, facts and figures. They want to be entertained. But overall, you know, I've been happy with the way that they've done it.
Outside of your own experiences, what do you think is the strangest story you've heard that's come from the ranch?
So many strange things happened during the Sherman time. I think that if I had to pinpoint it, the story of their dog being chased down by some type of craft or orb and being basically vaporized or killed definitely stands. I believe it was reported in the book that one of the scientists from Bigelow's time saw a portal open up and a creature come out of that portal. That is pretty spectacular as well. I would say those are the two that stand out in my mind, but again, like, there's so many stories that are from there that are just so strange that it's hard to pick one.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. It helps get this content in front of more listeners, which means we can produce more episodes more often. Visit our website at www.strange-phenomenon.com for a full list of sources and more episodes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at strange_phenom and on Facebook at Strange Phenomenon, all one word. Strange Phenomenon is hosted by Ray Tarara. It's written and produced by RJ Blake and Ray Tarara. Theme music by Tara Monk.